As a country kid myself, I feel a certain affinity with the disciples and their sense of just being so overwhelmed when they come to Jerusalem, to the big city. I mean, I still remember as a teenager, the first time that we went into the city, and my two older brothers, they convinced me that people in the city walked differently from people in the country. So they would practice walking up and down the hallway at home, and I would have to walk as fast as I could to try and keep up with them, because they said, look, only country people walk slowly. Everyone in the city walks really quickly. So we all learnt how to walk really quickly so that we wouldn't stand out as being from the country. And then when we arrived at the hotel that we were staying in, my two sisters were both studying to be nurses at the Mater Hospital in North Sydney. So we stayed in this hotel that had beautiful views over the harbour and over the city skyline. And my brothers had told me, now, Rick, when you walk into the room, just pretend that this is the most normal thing that we do this all the time. But instead, of course, I walked in and go, wow, look at this view. It's amazing. And they're beating me about the back of their head as they're doing all of this. So that sense of just, the wow factor of seeing the city for the first time, I get that. I've really experienced and feel for the disciples. So the temple was an extraordinary building. But I think we need to kind of get a bit of a sense of how big this thing really was. So our little church here at St. John's is about 400 square meters. Now, the biggest church in the world, who knows what that is? It's usually we relegate that to St. Peter's. As good Catholics, we say, yes, the biggest church is St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And again, I still remember the first time that I saw that in the flesh, as a 20-something year old. And the friends that I was traveling with, Mitch said, we've got to get off. We won't catch the express train from the airport to Termini. It's too far to walk from there. So we'll catch the suburban train. It takes a lot longer, but it ends up at St. Peter's train station. It's just a walk around the corner. And so when you come around that corner and suddenly St. Peter's is there in all its glory, you've seen it, so many times in pictures and images, but there it is. And then to finally be able to walk inside, this is before all of the new security measurements were taken, and you have to kind of queue up and be screened. And in the old days, you used to just walk straight out to the front door, and everyone would let you in, and all of our bags, the security guards would just take them and look after them. It was wonderful in the old days. But that says, a kid just being blown away. And you walk inside and it's just this enormous space. So 400 square meters here, St. Peter's Basilica, 15,100 square meters. It has the capacity to seat 20,000 people. So it's, it's a little bit bigger than the little St. John's in Campbelltown. The temple, what do you reckon? Is it about the same size as St. Peter's? A bit smaller, a bit bigger? Oh, come on. We're not going on until someone puts themselves out on the limb and makes a declaration. Smaller, same size, or bigger? Bigger, yes, it is a bit bigger. So 15,000 square meters is 1.5 hectares. The temple compound was 14.6 hectares, or 146,000 square meters. I was just at MacArthur Square, and of course it's over a couple of levels, and the net lettable area, which is the thing that they measure shopping centers by, it's 107,000 square meters. So 1.5 times bigger, or if you prefer Narellan Town Center, it's about 70,000 square meters, so double the size of Narellan. So the temple was enormous. 500,000 people could gather in the forecourts of the temple. So it's no wonder that these country bumpkins from Galilee, when they see the city and they see the temple there, and of course the ruler Herod had spent 46 years aggrandizing it, knocking down the old temple, making it much bigger and grander, and it was just the most magnificent building, one of the wonders of the ancient world. So it's no wonder that the disciples are like, look at this thing, Jesus, it's amazing, it's just huge. And what does he say? Yep, there will come a day where not a single stone will be left standing on another. And the disciples are like, what the heck are you thinking? What? When will this happen? What will be the signs? Of course, they want to know these questions. They want to know answers to this. You know, what? How could that possibly happen? This huge, enormous building. What could possibly happen that it would be utterly destroyed? And of course, it's only a generation later, under the Emperor Tiberius, that yes, indeed, that Rome utterly devastates the city of Jerusalem, laying siege to it in the year 69, and then in the middle, in July, in 70 AD, they finally break through the siege walls, and they're able to completely conquer, and over the course of the next year, they completely demolish all of the walls, and then the temple itself. All that's left is the foundation stones on the western wall, which becomes the Wailing Wall that you can still visit today. Jesus, though, says, look, these things are going to happen. You will see nation fighting against nation, kingdom against kingdom. You'll hear of earthquakes, and we hear that all the time. You know, we see every day that as Ukraine takes back more territory, or as Russia does its acts of violence and horror, or we, you know, hear of the earthquakes over just the last few days between Fiji and Tonga. We hear of, you know, continuing the fourth or fifth or sixth or whatever wave it is of the coronavirus. We hear all of these things that continue to frighten us, continue to bamboozle us. And Jesus says, look, just ignore all of that. Don't worry about all these things. Of course they will happen. That's just the state and the nature of humanity. This kind of thing is going to happen. Don't be distracted by all of that. Don't be worried by all of those things. What are we to do? We're to rest in the truth of who we are. We're to place ourselves in the goodness of God. Because he said, the greatest thing that any of you can do is simply to bear witness to my name, to speak on behalf of what God has done, the wonders that God has done in our lives, to know the gift of God, to receive that gift, and to allow that then to be the source of our witness, the source of our testimony, to be able to speak into other people's lives and to tell them about the glory of God's love, the gift of his life, and the wonders of what it has meant for my sins to be forgiven, for my wounds to be healed. The first reading gives us a beautiful image. Again, it might seem a bit scary to be told that we're going to be placed into this furnace, that the refiner's fire is going to come and burn away everything that is not of God. But that's all that means, that those sinful tendencies, those wounds, those things that continue to separate us from our true sense of who we are before God, that all of that, that God will do that work of removing that, of healing that, of removing anything that prevents us from being his people, that God wants to set us free, that God wants to restore and renew his people. And he will do that work in order so that we can continue to be the people that he wants us to be. People free to love and to serve and to worship in this present moment, to be the church and the community, that we can be this credible witness within the world. That's the invitation as we come to the conclusion of this liturgical year, to remind ourselves that being disciples and followers of Jesus, that's why we wear the green vestments, because green is the color of life and goodness and vitality. And green is the color of all of the lawns that continue just in this humidity and the rain and the heat to continue to grow out of control. Because that's what full flourishing is meant to be. We're meant to live in that goodness of God and to bear witness to that, to share the wonder of God's love, not to be distracted, not to be concerned about things that happen around us, but continue just to place ourselves before God and to give thanks for that, and to allow God to continue to do that work of refining us, renewing us, getting rid of that junk, so freeing us to be the people that he has called us to be and to bear witness to the truth and goodness of God's life and love within our world.